Okay, thank you, David. And I think all of the presentations have been slightly different, and that will not change. So just to say, I'm going to do this very much through the lens of IPCC, but as none of the material whatsoever has been approved by IPCC, I've done this through Imperial College branding, which gives me a little bit more freedom. And I just want to say right at the beginning, I would echo the messages that other people have made, that science is absolutely crucial for COP27. And I hope what I'm going to present really illustrates how important it is. IPCC has regular meetings with the UNFCCC Secretariat through the subsidiary body for scientific and technological advice. And we had a meeting just yesterday where we were mapping out the way that science and IPCC in particular would interface with the negotiations during COP27. So once again, a pleasure. There is a science day on the 10th of November. Egypt, Kate, you maintaining the tradition established in Glasgow, but also an Earth Information Day that's been put together by SUBST as well on atmospheric observation and the contributions that it can make to climate action. Of the other kinds of events, I've divided them into two kinds that I've called science push and policy pull. This is my terminology, I should say. Science push, meaning events that the scientists have come up with because they think they will be important. And the main route for that will be through an IPCC shared pavilion, which is branded Science for Climate Action, to send a very clear signal about the intention. And then on the policy pull side, I'm referring to events that have been stimulated by the negotiations side, where they've actively asked for scientific input to help with the negotiations. And one important element of that will be the contribution to the first global stocktake and the technical dialogue that's taking place at the moment. I should say the IPCC pavilion, there was a little bit of a bloodbath and kinds of debating between IPCC, WMO and the Mary Foundation, how many slots we all got each. IPCC has ended up with 20 slots in all together, about 8 for Working Group 2 on impacts, 8 for Working Group 3 on mitigation, then 2 each for Working Group 1 and science and the inventories people, because they have already had a chance at COP26. So I'll go through it, and just to flag, I will divide it up according to the working groups. I come from the mitigation working group, and these are the sessions that we will be putting on in the IPCC pavilion. And they're all very juicy topics that we well understand to be of importance to policymakers. First two, I will do a little bit of a deep dive into on scenarios and reconciling different estimates of greenhouse gas emissions. They both play into the negotiations. Now, I had the pleasure of presenting this slide, I think about 6 months ago, when I was presenting the Working Group 3 results at a Royal Society meeting. And I have to say, we scientists have done a great job about confusing policymakers about in the way that we present scenarios to the world. IPCC does not have its own scenarios. It assesses scenarios that other people produce, and there are thousands of them out there, but it's our job to distill them and send clear messages to policymakers. And as you can see with the terminology that I have splashed all over the screen, we're not doing a very good job at it at the moment, to the extent that when we do approve the Working Group 1 report, the policymakers cut through it and said, we'll have very low, low, intermediate, high, and very high, thank you, to cut through all this mess of different terminology. So we are going to have a couple of sessions on scenarios through IPCC. One, we will simply present what we've done to try and help people to understand it. But in the second one, it will be much more an engagement session with policymakers, where we will ask them what they want us to do with scenarios, how to construct scenario architectures that are actually meaningful for people. And that will actually lead to an IPCC workshop that will take place in April next year, where we decide or make recommendations for the next assessment cycle. Now, my apologies for the next one on reconciling different greenhouse gas emission estimates. I'm not going to give an academic seminar on this, but what I want to flag is that there is a 5 gigaton difference between the emission estimates submitted by countries under the Framework Convention and the emission estimates used in global models. Now, 5 gigatons is 10% of global emissions, so this is troubling, and it's mainly related to carbon dioxide fluxes from land. And many developing countries that are on the verge of trying to produce net zero commitments are actually struggling to understand what net zero means because of that 5 gigaton difference. So we are going to have a session with policymakers to try and explain what the differences are, which can be quite complex, and present ways in which these emission estimates might be reconciled. And I won't go into the detail, but the main difference is distinguishing land into managed land and unmanaged land, and distinguishing between direct human intervention and indirect and natural effects. And the inventories do it a different way from the global models. We understand the difference, but it is not an easy job to communicate it. And it does have a significance for the setting of net zero targets. I'll just flag up the other mitigation events that we will be having on the pavilion. And just to echo, I think, what David and Sir Patrick were saying, a lot of this is about the human side as well. A lot of this is around economics and social aspects. And I would particularly flag number 4 on the list, where IPCC, for the first time in a report, really dealt with lifestyle and behavioural issues and tried to get under the surface. And there has been a lot of interest in that. And I have to say, I was quite surprised that we managed to get some of the stuff through an approval session at the end of the day, because it's a little bit controversial. But I think it really moved the agenda forward. I should say, my pet subject, we're also having a session on managing just transitions. And the International Labour Organization is actually having a separate pavilion just devoted to just transition. Our colleagues in Working Group 2 are doing a set of events on impacts, adaptation and vulnerability. Their titles are still quite high level at the moment, but I'd flag up nature-based solutions and then specific concerns about, for example, the situation of small islands. We also have a number of events where we've collaborated across the working groups. And just to say, the collaboration between working groups has been absolutely exceptional in the last cycle. We've really worked together. So one will be on the question of overshoot, because many of the projections for the 21st century envisage us warming up, say, to 1.6, 1.7 degrees, taking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and cooling down again. And the consequences of that for impacts, adaptation, and vulnerable systems is something that needs explored. We've always kind of assumed that temperature goes up like that, and dealing with the impacts when it reaches a peak and comes down again is something that needs much better understood. Some colleagues have produced an excellent set of summaries for urban policymakers, particularly on adaptation, mitigation, and science, which I have to say are probably more comprehensible than some of the summaries for policymakers, which we painfully negotiate with the governments as we finalise the report. And climate information for near-term preparedness and risk management will also be covered there. Now, on the mandated events, and this is the kind of thing that's actually coming from the negotiation side, on Earth Information Day, there will be a session on observations for adaptation and early warning systems, but also, interestingly, a session on Earth observations for mitigation. And that's to help with measuring the impact of mitigation measures and emission inventories by Earth observation, rather than simply using the activity indicator times an emission factor to arrive at an estimate of emissions. And our colleagues in the inventories part of IPCC have just had an expert meeting on that. And the government's also wanted a specific event on adaptation needs based on the Working Group 2 report. And there will also be a special event on the gender-related aspects of AR6, which will cover the, as it were, the substantive content of the working group reports, but we'll also look at the way that gender balance could be improved within the negotiation and the scientific processes as well. And finally, there will be a high-level ministerial roundtable on pre-2030 ambition. And as I'm supposed to speak on it, but I still don't know what I'm going to say because we don't have the organisation meeting until tomorrow morning, I'm afraid I can't tell you much about this one. But the clear indication there, we have an emissions gap in that the pledges we have at the moment will not take us to 1.5 degrees, but we also have an implementation gap because the policies on the ground will not allow the pledges to be met, and we need to address both of these issues. This is the last substantive slide. It's on the global stocktake. Just to remind you, under the Paris Agreement, there will be a global stocktake every 5 years. The first one is in 2023. And next year, there will be a political phase to the global stocktake. But in this year, there is a technical phase where there's a big demand for the output of IPCC and other science to input into the global stocktake process to provide evidence. We've already had a set of sessions at the subsidiary bodies meeting earlier in this year, and it will COP27, we'll follow roughly the same pattern. There will be three kinds of ways in which it will happen, other than a beginning plenary and a closing plenary. There will be a set of round tables that broadly cover mitigation, adaptation, and means of implementation and support. These round tables were so busy in COP26 and at the subsidiary bodies meeting that people could not get into the room. They will now take place in the full plenary session and will go into breakout groups to discover more specific topics. And I noticed our colleagues in UNFCCC have managed to get the word transformation into the mitigation one, which is a major triumph because we struggled in IPCC for a long time to get the word transformation into agreed text. There will also be a couple of what they're calling focused exchanges on intersections, which will puzzle anybody. It also puzzles me, as I will be making one of the presentations at it. And again, we need to get under the surface. But basically, it's to look at the things that cut across mitigation and adaptation and means of implementation, because there are many responses to climate change that have mitigation and adaptation outcomes. And we do need to explore that. And finally, boldly, the organisers have created a World Cafe session where people will move around about 20 tables at half an hour intervals to talk about specific topics. It worked really well back in June. I had the joy of facilitating a table on what became known as energy transitions, which attracted a huge amount of attention given the topic. But this is really a valuable way of getting insights from policymakers where they're not constrained by the formal nature of the negotiations to try to pull the insights through. So I'll finish it there. But I think the big conclusion is that negotiations are hungry for scientific advice, and there is strong evidence of that. And one quote that came out for yesterday's meeting with Substa, it wasn't about keeping 1.5 alive, it was also keeping the science alive. And I will stop there.